situation delayed. Even though the time lost would later recouped only by devoting an equivalent number of hours to study of Torah is inexcusable. Tardiness and procrastination is inexcusable. Not because I lost an opportunity to study the Torah. I'll compensate for the lost opportunity. No. I broke the schedule. I did not keep the schedule. And these things were disobedient of the life. I'll be frank with you. When this dawned upon me, I thought that I was crazy. Simply out of my mind. What difference does it make? Whether you have a set schedule or you study chaotically, as long as the achievements are all right. Who cares about the how is the what, is the problem of what is resolved? But then I came across a thesis somehow. I started saying, but I forgot it. Forgot the thesis. This is about the Parsha about which one is the first question, which is the second question, when the human being is interrogated by the heavenly court on the final day of judgment. So, as I have on the Gemara said, it is they inquire of him first about Talmud. And the Gemara in Shabbos in Madlikin says that the question of Talmud is the second one. The first one is the source of Nesata de Muna. The second question is Kavata Itim Atev. So Tesva says, I'll read the basis. The Ode Amrinen Beterev Bami Madlik Vadatno. Is it included in the Shirik? Yes. That's what? What? Ode Amrinen Beterev Bami Madlikin. Shesheya, we may say, Nososo Venosato de Muno Kovato Itim Atero, but the inquiry about Ere is second, Rosom de Odom Sheisim Atero. Elo Shele Kova Itim Atero. It means that the final day of judgment, according to David, two questions will be presented to each one of us. One question is, did you study? Be hard to lie about it, because you can test right away. How to lie. Did you study? What did you accomplish? How much knowledge did you acquire? How much erudition? Second question will be, when you attempted to lie, to cover up. Yes, you studied. And after all, he was given the test, he emerged triumphant from the test. His flying banner is a long ago, yet we want to know something else. How did you study? Did you have a fixed schedule? Did you set aside certain hours, definite hours? Did you keep the schedule? Or did you break the schedule? It's the second question. When is what? The second is how. And that's what the Rambam begins to enumerate. One is in excellent health, one is in failing health, one is poor and rich, I mean, old man and young man. I mean, no excuse, whatever it may be, can serve, can simply mitigate the sin of breaking the schedule which one set up for Talmud Torah. I'm not preaching here, I mean, people should come to my shiur, I mean. At best, I must say, the law pertaining to Kriya sitting to the Rambam paper. Prima facie is enigmatic. The question simply, why is it necessary to set aside a definite hour? What difference does it make how one studies? As long as it puts in long hours, and as long as the results are good. In respect to other mitzvahs, let me ask another question. In respect to other mitzvahs we have never heard about rules having been said or formulated about regularity and orderliness. There's no law that the lulav should be held at the same hour, 7 o'clock in the morning. So there are such a law. There are such a law that the same hour actually to enter the sukkah. There are actually few at the same hour. There's no aloche pertaining to schedule. Why suddenly was such a aloche formulated? There's so much rigor and emphasis. There are actually few at the same hour. There's no aloche pertaining to schedule. Why suddenly was such a aloche formulated? There's so much rigor and emphasis. Wie werde ich damit reden? At the second glance, let me just begin to comment on this, that what appeared as incomprehensible short while ago reflects an exalted idea of Talmudic. Apparently, Talmudic aspires to transcend the intellectual formalism and rise to a sublime drama of faith. In this drama, we will see how actually man, the inner quest of man, for the redemption. Apparently, Talmud Torah is a dual activity. At one level, the mind is preoccupied with the study of the Torah. As such, it is a regular intellectual performance, which fits into the framework of the classical formula of learning, considered personal. At this level, the relationship prevailing between Jew and Torah, at the intellectual level, can be compared to, or rather equated to this, the universal subject-object encounter, which takes place in any intellectual performance. In essence, the encounter is purely functional, and using Buber jargon, it exhausts itself in the I-ink relationship. The I faces an object, something dead, something lifeless, which actually means the absence of relationship. At the second level, of course, as far as this level is concerned, the results count, the method, the way, are irrelevant. The how question is completely out of context. You just ask what, you test it, and that's all. The rest, how he studied, how he acquired knowledge, is irrelevant. At the second level, somehow, this allows it, not mysticism. Talmud Torah becomes a total performance, not only intellectual, a total performance. Claiming the role of the person of the person, it cannot be pressed into the classical, narrow classical formula of learning as an I-it confrontation. It is rather to use again a Buberian phrase, an I-Tao relationship. Who is the Tao? Who is the I? The Jew. Who is the Tao? The God. Talmud Torah is not just acquisition of knowledge, but the personal meeting of the Jew with the Torah. At this level, the Jew cannot just walk into the Beis HaMedrash unannounced and unexpected and study Torah. It is leisure time. As long as the Torah is an it, an object, one connects vis-à-vis an it at random, arbitrarily. There's no code of civility. There's no courtesy required in the relationship between a person and object. He can walk in like the scientist does, open up the door of the laboratory to pick up his test tube and continue with his research. Because the test tube is just an object. Is the Torah ever is a person? Call it down. If one must arrange a meeting, make a date with a person. A boy cannot meet a girl without a date, I don't know. I never made it. Otherwise, she will not wait for him. And the Jew. And if you can unlock it, Apotheke der Rendezvous. Nein, der Rambam placed enormous emphasis upon the sanctity of this rendezvous. The significance of keeping the engagement. Neither pain, nor hunger or abject poverty. Neither dreariness and desolation of old age, nor the aggressive excitement of youth, can fail as an apology for breaking the engagement around the good of the Torah. That's why the Rambam keeps on embracing. If an hour was designated, the appointment made, the meeting arranged, the rendezvous set, no excuse is good enough to disappoint the parents, to disappoint her. Anyway, no matter how potent the reason was, is a violation of the precept, Vogiso Belim Olaylo. And the commandment of Vogiso Belim Olaylo happened to be given to a man who was very busy. So Yeshua Ben Nun was the commander of the army, the commander-in-chief of the army, and he was busy in conquering Eretz Yisrael. So the fool, they had the job in the area to fill up one's time. Yes, let me see that the Rambam in Yosef Talmud Torah had a very strange idea, almost a vision, that to study the Torah means to keep a rendezvous with her. And to break this rendezvous means to disenchant or disappoint. And this is sin. This is a violation. So we came to the question. It's not I eat, it's I die. If the Jew is she. But the question arises again. Why is it important that the Jew have an engagement at the Torah? It is in general just the idea that the Jew-Torah relationship is an I thou rather than an I eat relationship. Why? What do they say? The Torah is a book, a discipline, a doctrine, a law, a letter, an intellectual activity, it's an ethic gesture, but one can master, but it's not a living person. Whom I have to meet? Is the whole halacha of to be sitting at the pure imagery, the random halacha, the flight of human fantasy? And my mind is somehow overwhelmed by it, an allegory, a mystical vision, which receives strength with the daybreak of reality? Or is it something more than all these things taken together? And I believe the second alternative is the true one. It is self-evident that Maimonides' emphasis upon a rendezvous is the Torah, and the significance of punctuality and promptness in keeping this rendezvous is to be understood as referring to someone else who trailed behind the Torah. Namely the Shchina. It's not a rendezvous with the Torah. The Torah is written on parchment. It's black ink and dry parchment. It's black ink and paper. The Torah is knowledge. The Torah is a discipline, it's a science, it's a method, it's a logic, it's an epistemology, it's a value. But not a living person. But someone living trails behind there, and this is the shift. And my mother was of the opinion that one is supposed to have a rendezvous with the Rabbeinu Shalom. And it is the shift. And the Rabbeinu Shalom, in this case, disguised as the shift, and the mother has never separated himself from his daughter, and the verschillende wereld in handel aan een leven. A company Sardora, her princess. And she is present wherever her princess happens to be. And she is here a little bit. Junior was there. Can we, and so some people want to have a shortcut to the liberation alone. So to say, last is Capandri. To get to the revelation as soon as possible. So can one may raise the question, and many have raised this question. Many. Can perhaps one meet the mother, Shine, without having a date with her daughter? In the need to work on Kfeis and Shach and Taz and the Marsha, and to spend long hours, daytime, at night, in order to understand the places in Marsha. And in order to meet Shine, so the answer is, a date with mother, Shine, can only be arranged through her daughter. Whoever is eager to invite mother must first set up a meeting with the princess. She always accompanies her. She is her mother, she is her friend, she is even the chaperone of the princess. Does not leave her out of sight. By dating the daughter, one dates the mother. It's a double date. Moshe kibul teva mitzinai. Sevron v'sheinemar. Why, and then in Sorel Yeshua, why didn't the Mishne say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mosar teva l'meshe v'sinai? Why, with regard to the relationship between Meshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the term kibul substituted for the term mosar? The answer is quite simple, because the Tere and Shkine and HaKadosh Baruch Hu are inseparable. And Shkine has never divorced herself from the Torah. The latter is still Teras HaDeshem. Her word, her beloved princess, we never parted. The Rebbeinu Shlom let Moshe and his chosen community share in the great adventure with the wonderful unity love affair of Shine and Tere. Whatever the Tere has never been given away, Rebbeinu Shlom still hold on to it. If the Tere moves, Rebbeinu Shlom moves along with the crowd. In this case, this guy is his mother. She's a chaperone. She's a friend. She's the mother. And the mitzvah Talmud Torah begins as an intellectual activity which requires exertion, concentration, absorption, and trained logical knowledge. And the aim of this activity is knowledge. However, once the activity was initiated, it turns into a great total experience, into a rendezvous with Shine. With having an appointment with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Jewish studying Torah is like a traveler who, within the sight of his initial goal, he thinks he can take a rest. He can stop and catch his breath. After a while, he realizes that the destination has not been reached yet. And he begins to continue with new strength, his new card, his new faith, upon his endless journey, toward unknown destination. Knowledge alone, at first, is very much desired. Whoever does not satisfy the Jew anymore, he is in love with the Shire. and has to keep an rendezvous with her. And apparently one may be alone. Knowledge must be, how to say, knowledge must turn into a great experience. In this context, another problem is resolved. It's an old problem which troubled the mind, had Chachmei Agode, Chachmei Adrush, Chachmei Kabole. A very simple problem. The problem is as follows. Have all Jews an equal share in the Torah? Have all Jews an equal share in the Torah? Or is the share proportionate to the accomplishment? In the view of God, and the shoemaker of Israel, have a share, an equal share in the Torah, or the other share was proportionate to the knowledge. There was no comparison, no equation between the share of the ignorant and the share of the Lamed of Talmud Chacham. Of course. On the one hand, we know the singular importance which we assign to and the singular status which the Talmud Chacham enjoys. Apparently, the Talmud Chacham is closer to Tere than the plain Jew. On the other hand, we know, we also know a pasuk which Moshe Rabbeinu proclaimed on the last day when he bid farewell to his community. Tere tshuva lanu Moshe meraso kivas Yaakov. The whole congregation owns the Torah. The scholar and the ignorant have the same rights and same privileges. Is the Torah esoteric or exoteric? What is the answer? The answer is simple. It depends what aspect of Talmud Torah is approached. The process of learning Torah at the first level, at the level of the intellectual gesture, is certainly esoteric, just accessible to a select few. The brilliant mind certainly accomplishes more than the dull, the slow mind. This cannot be helped. No process of democratization can change the character of education which was, is, and will be esoteric. There is an aristocracy of the brain. And this type of aristocracy, no congressional act can abolish. So, of course, as far as the intellectual gesture of Talmud Torah is concerned, the Torah is an esoteric discipline. The bright, the brilliant, and the greater share, and the slow, dull, ignorant. However, when we come upon the second aspect of Talmud Torah, as a rendezvous with the rebellion of the Shiva, as a meeting with God, but an act of, the act of Talmud Torah becomes immediately exoteric, completely democratic, accessible to us. And let me explain. When the Rambam enumerated various kinds of situations in which one must, in spite of staggering difficulties, comply with the strict Torah schedule, or keep the appointment in the Torah, he has indirectly conveyed to us a new idea. Namely, that that wild intellectual gesture of Talmudera is determined and measured by accomplishment, the experiential component of Talmudera, the rendezvous in the Shechina, is determined not by accomplishment, but by effort. The act itself is redemptive. Everyone benefits by the act. Or doesn't benefit, it's redemptive. It is sanctifying, it is inspiring, it is purging, it is cleansing, regardless who is engaged in it. Be a genius, be a dull person. Because if actually, at the second level, at the experiential level, Talmud Torah would be, where the crown and the work of Talmud Torah, where the crown of the accomplishment, then the halacha by the Rambam becomes absurd. I'll tell you why it becomes absurd. He says, whether he's in pain, or he's hungry, or he's very poor, he must collect for the support, for the sustenance of his children and wife. He must not bring that point. He must not be in pain while he's in pain. He must not be while he's hungry, suffering hunger pains. The question is, if accomplishment is important, you know very well that the man who is in pain, and my mother knew pretty well, that the man who is in pain or is hungry cannot accomplish as the man who is in good health. So why demand from the person the impossible? A frustrating gesture which will result, which will be just a waste of time. When I tell him, all right, you are in pain, the pain will, I hope, will subside tomorrow, a few days from now. So then you will recoup the loss. You will devote the same number of hours to Talmud Torah which you waste, you lose now. If my mother says, insisted, there's no excuse about it. So apparently at the second level, the accomplishment is not the important theme, is not the central topic, is not the determining factor. For the effort, the sacrifice, and in respect to the rendezvous with the Shechina, the study of Torah, centrality is being ascribed by the Rambam to the effort, to the results. The accomplishments are of marginal significance. The worth of the Shechina unity, or Jewish unity, is determined by the sincerity of the commitment, by the intensity of the dedication, by the warmth of the encounter, by the love and the passion of a God-questing man, and not by the brilliance of the performance. The Goyen and the dull person, the great mind and the simpleton, share the redemptive, harrowing experience in accordance with the effort. And the Rambam says, the hacking of your power in Peregrine. At this juncture, at which halachic thought and vision, abstraction and spiritual perception merge into one, and the frontier of knowledge can illuminate intuition of objectivity and subjectivity, of divine intellectual disciplines, and exciting romance with the Shechina, a new mitzvah emerges, and I am confident. It's a very strange mitzvah, that prima facie has not been noticed by the many mitzvahs, by those who have come in order as the table of the three of mitzvahs. But the mitzvah has never been lost. Let me elaborate a bit. In my opinion, there are two mitzvahs. There is one mitzvah, is a Mune Bakodesh Baruch. The second mitzvah is Bakosha Sakodesh Baruch, to search for the The Muna Bakodesh Baruch Hu was formulated by the Rambam Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah Perek Aleph Halacha, you know that, you know. And the initial letters form the name Havai, you all know. The first precepts in your heart, is a Munya Parishan. We all are acquainted with the first kind of Mishnah Tere. We saw that he said it's a Munya Chochmas. Leida Shiyesham Motri Rishon Gumam Tikolim Tso. Echol Anim Tso Yimishumayim Vora Kli Nivro Alom Amita Simotre. No, here I don't have to translate. What is the semantics of the term Leida? It's not a simple term. But in my opinion, of course, Emunah, belief in God, faith and trust in His absolute, true reality, omniscience, omnipotence, the absolute conviction that He is the only one whom we are committed unconditionally, the decision in our power, the final decision, we will serve, but whom we will abide. And the pasuk, the verse under which this Emunah B'Kodesh Baruch Hu is categorized, classified, Shema Yisrael Rambam himself quoted, Shema Yisrael Rabbaya Rekein Rabbaya. The idea of Dabar Zem Mitzvah Fafei, Shema Yisrael Rishem Rekein Rabbaya. However, we have another function. It's a very strange which fascinates us. This is exalted message, even though the message is a bit strange. And all this stress and all these things will come upon you on the Machnis Ayomim, the end of the days, after having worshipped so many idols, after having been assimilated in so many cultures, into so many millions, the Shabto Adel Shem Melekeh, thou wilt return to the Lord of God. The Kashtem Ishon, Es Adel Shem Melekeh, O Matzoso, but from thence you will seek the Lord of God, and thou shalt find him, Kisid Rishon, Bechol Evochol, Bechol Nashach. And thou wilt touch him with all the heart, with all the throat. What is it in the Kashtas? We are Maminim Bnei Maminim. We have known God since our origin. Since the dawn of our history. What is it in the Kashtas? We are a lost thing. You search for something to lose. Lost. But we never loved God. We may search for God. Who's right here? In my opinion, there is a separate commandment to search God, to quest for Him, to yearn greatly, to continue searching until one finds Him. There is a limitation, and to search God is a very difficult process. But the Torah assures us, if the search will be sincere, with thy hope, with thy soul and thy heart, will finally find Him. The significance of this mitzvah, I don't have to describe. Its fulfillment is the conditio sine qua non for the great historical messianic redemption, because the Torah made the redemption of Israel dependent upon Matzasa, the Kashtem Ishon Matzasa. Without Matzasa there is no redemption. Never mind food, but without Matzoso there is no redemption. There is something else which the Torah requires of the Jew. Not only compliance, not only conformity, but to Matzoso, thank God. Apparently, questing for God is not just an obsession of a few God-intoxicated people, but a real preoccupation of the Isha Lohem. The Torah was not given to mystics, the Torah was given to every Jew, the Torah to the nation of Russia, to the Yaakov. It's both, and Isha Aloha is both realistic and intellectually minded. Since the Torah is both, they recommended Bakosha for the king, the search for God, we may say, is not an esoteric art, for the Aloha rejected, a mitzvah which exalts exhausted of his exorcism. Even Talmudere, the second stage, becomes an exoteric. But it, what does Bakoshes and Akim signify? One apparently can perform all mitzvahs and believe in God without searching for him, without finding him. In my opinion, the Torah is written recommending to us the search for God was concerned with the total religious experience. Or, if I may say, this religious sensibility, or let me substitute another word, this religious sensuality. Not only are we called upon to believe in him, to have faith in him, to comply with his law, but to find him with our five senses, not only with our mind. Not only with our mind, it's not enough. Not only in thought, but with our five senses. To perceive him the way one perceives life. The way I perceive now, I see the crowd here, the order of the congregation. To feel his presence in our midst. To cleanse what one Baalei Kabbalah said was the doors of conception in order to let in the revelation. To apprehend him right here and now. And this is also very characteristic. If the Shechina is here, and the Shechina is a mother, if she is a good loving mother, who holds us in her embrace, cares for us, is concerned about us, and never absents herself from us, then she expects reciprocity. A father who wants to be respected, obeyed, a mother who wants just recognition, that the son knows that she is present. The son, all a mother wants, is that the son be aware of her presence. She is afraid, mortally afraid, of being ignored. I remember years ago, when I came to Boston, there was an old couple who had a son who was a prominent physician, a surgeon. The son was a good son, of course, in American terms. A good son who used to call phone his parents twice a week on the dial. After each phone call, the mother used to be excited. So excited, she used to call me and say, you know, my son, the doctor, is not going to live. Overflowing his love and affection. The father, on the contrary, cool and reserved, was two attitudes in command with the father's father, and I felt that the telephone call used to aggravate him more than please. I once couldn't control myself, and I asked him, he was a clever Jew, an old man. I once asked the old man, why is he so taciturn? Whenever a call comes through from his son, while the wife is overcome with ecstasy, with emotion, the old man answered, I want respect for my son, and I know that he cannot give me respect because he is educated and I'm ignorant. An educated man does not respect an ignorant man. She doesn't want respect, my old lady. She wants recognition that she still exists, that she gets the phone. The Danish one is our father who wants respect and obedience, compliance with his will, conformity to his law. The Danish one is our mother who wants just recognition that she is ours. She is right here. That she is with us. She has never absented herself from us. The need satisfy the father. They do not make mother happy. She wants to be near her son, and that his son should welcome her presence. The eye of a father and focus upon the objective expression of faith. Mitzvah Sumaritan Pelet. The eye of the mother is focused upon affection and love and recognition. And this is the Kashtras and the Shemalikah. And I must tell you, perhaps I should confine it. Yeah. Please, don't misinterpret me. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not boasting, as well as I'm not in the mood. Nor am I somehow trying to exhibit my religious experiences. Really, the Jews were very modest, very humble, as far as their religious experiences are concerned. I thought of the rabbinical convention several weeks ago. There is not a single Jewish mystic which wrote an autobiography or confessions about his life. Their experiences were their own private business. As the one which finds refinement does not confine his love for his wife or his children in anybody. But this is the Kiddush HaKadoshim of the human personality. And no cynical eye should penetrate the curtain which shuts out sight of the Kiddush HaKadoshim. So it should never told anybody. The Ram was a great, was a man of great religious experience. You have to read between the lines. He never could say. And so I'm not confiding. But however I want to be, if not for that book, which I have developed during a long night, a long, dark, driven night, to use the mystical phrase of the song, the world crashed at me, came down on me. If not for the ability I developed to meet with the Rebbeinu Shlomo, to feel him near, to feel him around me, to feel the Shechinah close to me, to feel the Rebbeinu Shlomo listening to my complaint, having compassion for my suffering and pain, I wouldn't have survived. Please, Bakosha Salakim, became an island of safety and peace for me. And these Bakosha Salakim, according to the Rambam, is nothing dependent upon the brilliance of the person, intellectual brilliance, or ability. So it's dependent only upon sincerity. One must quest for him. Search him. He will finally find him. He must suffer consideration of the Holy Gospel of Holy Asherah. If the question is sincere and genuine. I'll just look at this rather.
I'm going to go to the hospital. Körper nicht mehr.